It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
All eyes on Ida. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
We are going to see catastrophic damage. This will be one of the worst hurricanes to hit the U.S. coastline since records started.
The beast of the bayou continues a destructive path northward through Mississippi today after lashing Louisiana with catastrophic intensity. Correspondent Jim Crisula.
Hurricane Ida blasted ashore along the southeast Louisiana coast as one of the strongest storms to ever hit the U.S. The Category 4 storm had top winds of 150 miles per hour. The storm even reversed the flow of the Mississippi River.
Ida's eye wall stalled for several hours after roaring ashore Sunday afternoon. Many homes and businesses will be in the dark for weeks, if not months. The extent of the damage, hard to put into words, says Morgan Chesky in hard hit Houma, Louisiana.
I couldn't even tell you what this business is because of what it's been reduced to. The rubble stretches on nearly every block. I spoke with a police officer. I said, put this in perspective for us. He says it's the worst he's ever seen.
Ida featured a wind gust of 172 miles per hour, the strongest ever recorded on the U.S. mainland. The whiplashed Gulf Coast, hoping to avoid a repeat of Hurricane Katrina, which struck on the same day as Ida did 16 years ago. Reporter Michael George has more from the Big Easy.
Here in New Orleans, the entire city lost power after all transmission lines were down. Still, officials remain confident that the changes they made since Katrina could prevent a repeat of the disastrous results we saw 16 years ago.
Right now, first responders haven't even begun to get a grasp of the scope of the damage. Water rescues continue in Louisiana and Mississippi. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
Many, many people are going to be tested in ways that we can only imagine.
Meteorologist Bill Caron says what's left of Ida will spell a wet Wednesday for us as the storm makes a slow slog north and east.
It's going to be bringing heavy rain all the way through the mid-Atlantic and even into areas of the northeast.
Ida's rains will cause flash flooding for some 30 million Americans today. Over 1 million people have no power in Louisiana and Mississippi. The other big story today, evacuation deadline in Afghanistan. Correspondent Tracy Potts.
The full U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan is set to happen by midnight tomorrow. Today, the urgent push to get Americans to safety.
On the eve of our August 31st getting out date, the U.S. has intercepted five rockets that were fired at the Kabul airport. It follows a U.S. drone strike that killed two senior ISIS leaders yesterday. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
And the fact that two of these individuals are no longer walking on the face of the earth, that's a good thing.
The State Department says any American who wants out will be able to get out even after the 31st. Secretary of State Tony Blinken.
There's no deadline on that effort. And we have mechanisms to help facilitate the ongoing departure of people from Afghanistan if they choose to leave.
But there's growing concern some Americans will get left behind in the mad dash to exit Afghanistan.
There are hundreds of Americans that are going to get left behind in Afghanistan.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says ISIS terrorists have free reign over that country right now.
We are less safe today than we were before 9/11 because now they have our weaponry. Taliban now has more Black Hawk helicopters than Australia.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
The parade of horribles are about to unfold. We're leaving thousands of Afghan allies behind who fought bravely with us. We're going to leave hundreds of American citizens behind. The chance of another 9/11 just went through the roof.
Yesterday, President Biden received the bodies of those 13 U.S. service members who were killed in last week's suicide bombing at the Kabul airport. Correspondent David Martin.
As each casket was carried off the plane, the president put his hand over his heart, and the chiefs of the armed services saluted. The president, who knows firsthand the grief of losing a child, looked at times to be in physical pain. Someone behind him appeared to faint and had to be carried away.
A new ABC News poll out today shows 85% of Americans believe that U.S. troops should stay in Afghanistan until all U.S. citizens are out. COVID hospitalizations have increased 500% in this country in just the past 2 months. Southern states with low vaccination rates are leading the way. Experts say shots for kids under 12 are still months away. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
The vaccine could be available at some point, late fall, more likely early winter.
Pandemic point man Dr. Anthony Fauci says vax mandates for school children is, in his opinion, a good idea. Last week, New York's health department says everybody must wear a mask to enter school in the Empire State. A Hollywood legend has passed, Ed Asner, who played Mary Tyler Moore's gruff, lovable TV boss, died over the weekend.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well, yes.
I hate spunk.
Asner won 7 Emmys for his role as the tough-talking Lou Grant on The Mary Tyler Moore Show. He played Santa on the Will Ferrell Christmas classic Elf and was the voice of the old man in Pixar's Up.
You ever heard of a snipe? Every night it sneaks in my yard and gobbles my poor azaleas. I'm elderly and infirm. I can't catch it. If only someone could help me.
Ed Asner was 91 years old. Still to come on the Noon Report, for a Monday, Elmira's crime problem, road warriors honored at the New York State Fair, and it's a wrap in Williamsport. But first, let's stop by the Weather Center. A very busy Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're going to watch very closely the remnants of Hurricane Ida. Those remnants could flood parts of Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier of New York later this week. I'll have forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, see you then. Let's talk more about Ida in Pennsylvania. Emergency officials are telling residents to get ready for what's coming later this week.
We will not experience any winds with this, or at least not major winds. This is going to be a heavy rain threat, a flooding threat.
Meteorologist Brett Thacker with ABC 27 says up to a half foot of rain could devastate the mid-state region and eastern sections of Pennsylvania.
Today and tomorrow now are the time to prepare if you know you live in a flood-prone area, because we could be talking about some significant rain.
The first rain bands from Ida will be felt tomorrow night in Pennsylvania. The storm will remain a threat in the Keystone State and eastern sections of the listening area all day Wednesday and on into early Thursday. The Red Cross of Rochester, New York is deploying dozens of volunteers to hard-hit Louisiana to assist in the recovery effort from the hurricane.
I'll be flying into Mobile, Alabama tomorrow. But where I end up, I don't know. Wherever the greatest need is.
That's Richard McCrory of Rochester. He's been a Red Cross volunteer for 5 years and will be providing spiritual as well as physical care to storm victims.
Mostly disaster spiritual care is about helping people to find hope in the midst of what seems like hopeless situations. First and foremost, we are people of prayer, so we pray for the victims and also for the people that are responding.
Red Cross volunteers are deployed on a 2-week basis. They are in need of more workers like Richard McCrory. If you can help, go to redcross.org and find out how. The recent spate of violence in Elmira, New York has citizens of that city concerned. John Couture has lived in Elmira his entire adult life and says crime has never been this bad.
Elmira's getting worse. From what I see, I've been here a long time.
Elmira Police Chief Anthony Alvarez says he shares the frustration of the community, but adds that cops will not back down from the bad guys.
I do fear for the citizens of the city. It's not good right now. And unfortunately, that is my responsibility. And I take that seriously. I think we are at an unprecedented time right now.
The police chief cites New York's new bail reform law as one of the reasons why crime is so bad in the city of Elmira. A Pennsylvania politician proposing legislation that would give minors the right to choose for themselves whether they want a COVID vaccine. The Keystone State, like most states, requires parental consent before a minor can get the shot. State Senator Amanda Cappelletti has authored a bill that gives minors the right to make their own vaccination decisions, regardless of their parents' wishes. Well, Buffalo, New York is one of 19 cities nationwide that is taking in refugees from Afghanistan. These are people who fled the country due to the Taliban takeover earlier this month.
The moment you get off the plane, you are assuming you don't have any family here to meet you. You will be met by one of our case managers.
Denise Phillips-Behag will be assisting in the refugee resettlement process.
They are very grateful to come to the United States. There is a long vetting process that they go through, and when they come here, they very much see themselves as Americans.
Afghans who arrive at the Buffalo Niagara International Airport will be moved into apartments, must find work as a condition of the resettlement process. A man on a bicycle hit and killed by an 84-year-old woman driving a vehicle last night in Amherst, New York, happened on Long Meadow Road. The 57-year-old male victim pronounced at ECMC. No word on if any charges will be filed. Two Clearfield County, Pennsylvania firefighters were injured yesterday in a garage explosion. It happened in Pecaria Township. Those injuries are said to be not serious. New York Governor Kathy Hochul unveiling a new memorial yesterday honoring fallen highway workers. The ceremony happened at the state fairgrounds in Syracuse.
We have an opportunity to not just honor the people we've lost, but to show respect going forward to those who are willing to put themselves on the line, literally in harm's way every single day they go out onto the very busy highways and throughways of our state.
The statues to remember transportation employees killed while doing their jobs on New York's thousands of miles of highway.
I know that there's been a lot of talk during this pandemic about essential workers. What is an essential worker? I want to make sure that when people talk about these essential workers, they talk about the people who also showed up on the roads. We'd be back to the horse and buggy days if we didn't have people who were willing to get out there and do this.
To protect the hard hats, the governor says police will be adopting a zero-tolerance policy toward motorists who speed through construction zones.
We're going to continue our Operation Hard Hat project where we're out there giving tickets to people. We don't want to give tickets, but if you're crossing the line, we're going to give you a ticket.
125 highway workers are killed each year in auto accidents that are caused by speeders and reckless drivers through construction zones. A generous donation in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, is helping to make dreams come true for thousands of young soccer players. Thanks to this anonymous gift, the Greater Wyoming Valley YMCA has been able to distribute more than 3,000 pairs of brand new soccer cleats. Those cleats were given out to youth soccer clubs and families in need throughout the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. And keeping in the Keystone State, it is a wrap now on the 75th annual Little League World Series. Typically tens of thousands will jam into Lomedy Stadium in South Williamsport for the championship game, but not this year, sadly. Due to COVID restrictions, only about 1,000 people were let in to watch in person. Those who did were not disappointed.
It was very exciting because you might not ever get to go here again.
It was a very exciting experience, especially for my son. Being here with my son and my wife, we was able to just take it all in.
It is something else. If you've never been, make sure you do. We get more on how the game went next in sports. It's the 2-Minute Drill.
Yeah, when the Little League World Series started, Bob Price said, look out for Michigan, and Taylor Michigan leading Hamilton, Ohio 5-2. Ohio had the bases loaded. Top of the sixth inning, two outs, and
this ball driven to center. It's playable. Farkas is there, and it ends in his glove. And the Taylor North Little Leaguers are World Series champions.
Look at Bob. Michigan wins. Home of the Little League World Series champions for the first time since 1959. From the littles to the bigs, the New York Mets collected their first series win in their last four attempts. They took the finale between them and the Nationals 9-4. Javier Baez hit a two-run homer, and as he crossed home plate, he saluted the Mets faithful with two thumbs down.
It was my opinion, you know, and it's just how I feel. You know, like I said, I love the fans, and I like playing for the fans, but We can't have our fans against us.
The Mets are 7.5 games out of the National League East lead. The Phillies are 4.5 games out. They beat the Diamondbacks 7-4 for the third straight time, but that's after losing 4 in a row to Arizona. The Yankees cooled down a little, falling to the A's 3-1. The Yanks have a 2-game lead in the American League wildcard. The Blue Jays are 5.5 back after their 2-1 win over the Tigers. Cleveland beat the Red Sox 7-5. A walk-off win between the Cardinals and the Pirates. Can you tell whose announcers these are?
Shichugo launches one out to deep right. It stays fair and gone. The Pirates win it.
Yeah, Pirates win 4-3. Patrick Cantlay was awarded the BMW Championship after a 6-hole playoff and saw Bryson DeChambeau miss this putt that could have sent it to a 7th hole. Cantlay earned his 5th career PGA Tour victory, the only player on the tour with 3 wins this season. And the U.S. Open begins today. For the first time since 2000, the Grand Slam will not feature Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, or Serena Williams, all 3 sidelined with injuries. Defending U.S. Open champion Naomi Osaka competing in her first major since the French Open earlier this year. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much. Still to come on the Noon Report, Ida makes the Mississippi run in reverse. That's how strong that storm was. Losing Afghanistan, the door to Kabul closes tomorrow, and reclaiming cursive writing in the classroom. Where has it gone, and why does it matter?
The demise of Darwinism may only be a matter of time. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. The theory of intelligent design is often dismissed as religion pretending to be science. However, a new paper entitled, and I'm not kidding here, On the Waiting Time Until Coordinated Mutations Get Fixed in Regulatory Sequences, shows that intelligent design theory should be taken more seriously. This technical, math-intensive paper with a title sufficient to scare off the normal person was written by 3 intelligent design researchers. As Casey Luskin explains at Evolution News, the project came out of the Discovery Institute's ID 3.0 initiative, an initiative that aims to test how plausible Darwinian evolution is on a mathematical level. Here's the background. The fossil record has been a perpetual problem for Darwin's theory ever since it was first published in 1859. Put simply, the fossil record just doesn't look like the theory predicts that it should. If, as Darwin proposed, all the diversity of life on Earth developed through natural selection, sorting random variations over untold eons, well, living things should change very gradually. And so, the record of evolution found in the rock should also look gradual, too. Invertebrates turning slowly into fish, fish turning slowly into amphibians, which turn slowly into reptiles and mammals, and so on. However, what's found in the actual fossil record is grounds for what philosopher of science Stephen Meyer calls Darwin's doubt. Numerous bursts of biological diversity, like the famous Cambrian explosion. Evolutionary biologists, of course, have developed ways to explain away these sudden leaps in the history of life and to reassure us of evolution's creative power. However, testing these explanations in order to determine whether or not evolution is really up to the job of generating new life forms so suddenly, well, that's proven difficult. It's the so-called waiting time problem. Gills, wings, functional legs, eyes, these are traits that result from many mutations, often in regulatory regions of DNA, before any organism gets any fitter from them. But as the necessary mutations required for these traits pile up, so does the time required. Too much time, in fact. To summarize the paper, Luskin uses the example of a bag of red and blue marbles. Let's say you want only blue marbles, and you're forced to select them at random. And let's say that it takes an average of 2 seconds to pull out a marble. Well, because the search is random, it'll take 4 seconds to pull out 2 marbles, 8 seconds to pull out 3, and so on and so on. The time required for each additional marble increases exponentially. And in the same sense, mutations are the alleged raw material of evolution. As the authors of the paper note, many traits that confer a survival advantage, such as those activated by regulatory regions in DNA, involve sequences hundreds or thousands of nucleotides long. These kind of blue marble mutations could each take centuries to happen, and none of them offer a survival advantage until they change the expression of actual genes. It's just a simple math problem for evolution. Now, perhaps simple, of course, is the wrong word here for the kind of dense model that's offered in this paper. And to be clear, the authors merely developed the method and then suggest how it might be applied to the fossil record. Even so, they've offered a plausible way to calculate just how much time evolution requires. Perhaps just as important, this is just the latest in a series of papers by intelligent design researchers that have sustained peer review. ID theory is capable of making scientific predictions and providing insights. In some ways, in fact, it better explains the wonders of the living world than does this theory that has so dominated the scientific world for so long. A theory whose demise might only be a matter of time. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
We are coming up on 20 past the hour. Let's take it outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life weather forecast for this afternoon. Warm and humid, a cool front crosses the area with a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms from central New York into central and eastern Pennsylvania. Elsewhere, some sunshine and high temperatures in the lower to mid-80s, dropping into the 60s tonight. Tomorrow, some sunshine for most slight chance of a shower in southern Pennsylvania. Cooler, less humid, 70s and low 80s. Wednesday, cooler still, mainly cloudy. Could be a flooding rain in Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier of New York on Wednesday, with high temperatures in the mid-60s to low 70s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. I'm Bob Price. This is the Noon Report. Here's what's happening Monday, the 30th of August. The impact of Ida, one of the strongest hurricanes to ever strike the U.S., still being realized along the Gulf Coast. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
This is the time to continue to remain in your safe places. Not a time to venture out throughout our city at all. It's unsafe.
FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell.
I think we're going to see more damage than what we probably initially projected. Not only was this a Category 4 storm, but it stayed a Category 4 storm for hours.
Meteorologist Bill Caron says when the history books are written on this one, people will not soon forget the name Ida.
172 mile per hour wind gusts. That is pretty rarefied air and one of the strongest recorded wind gusts we've seen with any hurricane recorded in our country's history.
More than a million people have no power along the Gulf Coast, including the entire city of New Orleans.
The way the rain just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. It wasn't heavy, but it was sideways consistently for at least 8 hours here. And it just kept howling.
Reporter Dave Cohen in the Big Easy. Ida struck on the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Here's correspondent Jim Crisula.
For those of us who experienced Katrina here 16 years ago, Ida has brought back a rush of nightmarish memories, a PTSD trigger. No power, no air conditioning, in extreme heat and humidity, no running water, and very limited food. It's a surreal experience, a repeat of horrible and life-changing challenges.
30 million Americans at risk of flooding today. On Wednesday, parts of Pennsylvania and the eastern Twin Tiers could see damaging rain as the remnants of the storm move up the coast and out to sea. Well, tomorrow is our getting out day in Afghanistan. Correspondent Charlie Daggett says it remains to be seen if all Americans will be able to leave before the door closes for good.
The U.S. State Department said they received Taliban assurances that all foreign nationals and Afghans who want to leave the country can. However, sources have told us even those with the right documentation have been prevented from leaving.
The U.S. thwarted an attempted rocket attack at the Kabul airport Sunday as evacuation flights were underway. Five rockets fired at the airport. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo fears the absence of a military presence in Afghanistan will embolden the enemy.
I've heard folks talk about leverage after our departure. It's our presence that provided the leverage, that when we're gone, that leverage is greatly diminished.
By tomorrow, there will be no U.S. troops on the ground in Afghanistan for the first time in 20 years. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell calls the loss of Afghanistan the most bungled foreign policy decision ever in our country.
Our heroic military is doing as best they can with a horrible policy decision. This is one of the worst foreign policy decisions in American history. Much worse than Saigon, because after we left Saigon, there weren't Vietnamese terrorists who were planning on attacking us here at home.
There are hundreds of American students from the American University of Kabul stuck in Afghanistan. They were turned away at the airport Sunday. President Biden refused to talk to the press about it yesterday.
I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan?
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan.
Okay. The president saying there he's not going to answer questions about Afghanistan. A U.S. drone strike yesterday yesterday killed two suspected ISIS members. It was retaliation for last week's suicide bombing that claimed the lives of 13 American service members at the Kabul airport. The president received their remains Sunday at the Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. In Calabasas, California, a woman is being credited with saving the life of her 5-year-old son. He was attacked and dragged across his front yard by a 65-pound mountain lion. Mom came out and punched that animal with her bare hands. The boy suffered injuries to his head and upper body, but should make a full recovery. Don't get between mom and her baby. Now, 25 past the hour, next at noon, rethinking missions. College debt has really put a damper on the work of missions worldwide. That's why one school in particular in the Midwest is getting innovative in allowing more young people to serve on the mission field. Our guest is David Haas at Bethany Global University in Bloomington, Minnesota. He spoke recently with our own Tracy Lynn.
College debt is one of the biggest challenges for folks who aim to serve on the mission field. Am I correct, David, that many mission agencies won't even allow individuals to serve until the bulk of that debt is paid off?
That's correct. Mission agencies don't want to get people sent overseas who then have to come home because they can't bear the burden of the tremendous debt they've accrued while getting their training or collegiate experience to prepare them for the field. Really, the challenge becomes a person goes to work to pay their debt off, and by the time they get their debt paid off, they've got a whole other life going.
Yeah, they're married with children, and there's a lot of different changes. So you serve, David, as president of Bethany Global University in Minnesota, and the school has come up with a way to wipe out the debt hurdle for future missionaries. Would you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So at Bethany Global University, we are what's considered a work college, and thus we can offer students what we call the tuition paid model. Half of it is covered by them working an on-campus job, and the other half is covered with institutional aid or Pell Grants. So our students are graduating after a 4-year degree with minimal debt. On average, our graduates have less than $10,000 in debt.
Wow. And you have multiple programs. It's not just missions. It's missions in multiple forms.
That's right. So we're training people for a career in missions, but not everybody's going to go to the field and operate or bring the same gifting skill set to the field. So we offer a degree in education and missions, primarily focused on primary elementary school age children using a Montessori format. We have a degree that's an intercultural studies degree, and that's just a classic preparation for missions degree. And then we have a degree called transformational entrepreneurship. So those people are prepared for a career in missions where they go in and make a difference or an impact economically in a community. And then all the students get a second degree in Bible and theology. Our students spend their freshman and sophomore year on campus, and then they live overseas as missionaries for their junior year and part of their senior year. They go as funded missionaries to the field, take online courses with BGU while they're there as a part of our program. So by the time you graduate from a school like Bethany Global University, you have lots of experience already living in another context as a missionary, and you've got the degrees.
Yeah, and you've got established places overseas.
Right. The students go in cohorts of 5, 6, 3. But we serve alongside fielded missionaries who are veterans on the field, who've already got a strategy in place for reaching the communities that they're serving in. Our students help implement those strategies for the 13 and a half months they're living in country, and then they return back to campus for their final semester and graduate.
And I'm sure it's a wonderful time for them to recognize, okay, this is what I've learned about myself. This is what I've learned about God from this experience. I'm guessing some do some soul searching and say, well, maybe I would need to tweak this for it to be a good fit for me.
Right. You know, they're going to get an opportunity to learn a ton. And they may come back and say, you know what? God used this educational experience to prepare me for something other than missions. And many of them come back and say, absolutely, this is what I want to do. I now know for sure I want a career in missions. You could drop me anywhere in the world, and I know how to integrate into a culture, learn a language, and start advancing the gospel.
Yeah.
Because of the experience I had while I did this global internship.
I love the whole internship idea because I think people can kind of get their feet wet, so to speak, before they commit more years of study and money. David, do you have any advice for folks listening who their mission field may not be overseas, but maybe it's right where they are in their neighborhood because if we know the Lord, we've each been sent to minister. Any words of advice today for us where we are?
If you think you want a career in missions, but you're not sharing the gospel with the people who live next door, there's not like a magic switch that gets thrown when you go to Slovenia, right? There's people all around us that don't know Jesus. We should be looking for opportunities through even our lifestyle to have opportunities to share. I'm not advocating that everybody has to be tracts in hand knocking on the neighbor's door, but am I praying for my neighbors? Am I looking for opportunity to introduce the gospel to my neighbors? Do I know my neighbors? These are all things that we can all be doing because we know the truth of the gospel, and it has set us free, and it's brought us life, and there's people all around us who desperately need it.
That is David Haas at Bethany Global University in Bloomington, Minnesota. You can download today's Missions in Action feature at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Of course, the big national weather store continues to be Ida. The remnants of the once massive hurricane will be accelerating north and east and moving into the lower northeastern states later this week, posing the potential of flooding rains in parts of our area, especially in Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier, Wednesday and Wednesday night into early Thursday, something we'll watch very closely. In the meantime, for this afternoon, warm and humid, a cool front crosses the area with a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms from central New York into central and eastern Pennsylvania. Elsewhere, some sunshine and high temperatures in the lower to mid-80s, dropping into the 60s tonight. Tomorrow, some sunshine for most slight chance of a shower in southern Pennsylvania. Cooler, less humid, 70s and low 80s. Wednesday, cooler, still mainly cloudy. Could be a flooding rain in Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier of New York on Wednesday, with high temperatures in the mid-60s to low 70s.
All right, Kevin, lots to consider weather-wise. Thank you very much. Finally, from us at noon for a Monday, meet the 91-year-old, yep, 91, teaching cursive writing to Arizona students in order to keep the lost art of handwriting alive.
The rise of the keyboard and smartphone has led to the lost art of handwriting in many modern classrooms. Most schools don't even teach it anymore. That's where 91-year-old Marilyn Herrer of Scottsdale, Arizona comes in. This retired school teacher is trying to change the culture when it comes to writing in cursive. Herrer volunteers once a week at her local elementary school where she's affectionately known as the Cursive Queen. Herrer points out America's most sacred documents, including the Declaration of Independence, are written in cursive, so it's important for kids to not just write in cursive, but to learn to read it too. Studies have shown a link between cursive writing and brain activity in kids. Brennan Dixon, Family Life News.
Reclaiming the lost art of penmanship. Love it. Thank you, Brandon. That's the world we live in. Monday, the 30th of August. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.